Reading from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 4, Text 82. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare prema paradina vichara charavajita niyoja yattatam daudye saradye pi mamapabhum. O Pandavas, pure love has subdued you. Ignoring discrimination and etiquette, you engage my Lord as your messenger and charioteer. Commentary. In his trance of kirtan ecstasy, Hanuman addresses the Pandavas as if they were present before him. I need water. He is astounded at their behavior with Krishna, violating the properties that forbid servants from giving orders to their master. The Pandavas failed even to consider that menial services, like carrying messages, are not tasks in which to engage Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the entire universe, the supervisor of Brahma and all the demigods. The Supreme Lord submits to such treatment only with his dearest devotees. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksturunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vairagya Yudvakti Risham Piyatnai Apayama Manabhitsamandam Kripambuhiya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumasriyami Mancha Kalpa Tarukyashya Kripa Shindu Bhai Vija Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Greeting from Sayerville at the home of the triplets, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra Temple Mandir. We had a very nice function here yesterday. And we also honored a dear friend and saint who left this world in the holy land of Vrindavan a month or two ago, Sri Dadu Prabhu. And it was very, very nice. We had a nice little separate altar set up from him. In fact, the flowers and the picture is still there. And everybody got to offer their respects. And I started when I did speak, we had a nice kirtan, even though the experts weren't there. But the sincerity was there. All you need is a humble madanga player that tries to serve the kirtan with a simple beat. And it's actually very nice. But I began the discussion or the glorification of this Vaishnava who passed away, I just ask people to think of a person whom they consider saintly, and then think of why. And it was a very, very nice meditation. I think I've done this on this class, but it illustrated, a lot of things. One, how wonderful it is to glorify devotees and to think of their qualities, and how purifying it is for the heart, because it's just science of psychology. That when you worship and glorify and appreciate someone, it's a conduit for their qualities to come to you. So in Vaishnav or any spiritual practice, especially theistic practice, this should be done. We should hold the form and the qualities and the activities and the names of God and his devotees before our consciousness. And whomever we glorify and worship, that indicates what we're attracted to and what we want to nourish within ourselves. I had these students that even though they came to Vaishnavism, they were so attracted to Elvis Presley. I don't know. Hard for young ladies to give that up. But I don't know how healthy it was. Or whatever it is, whatever. But it was interesting, and so it really demonstrated that, what a pleasure that is to glorify the devotees. What to speak, it's mentioned in Shastra, what to speak of serving the devotees. How much more you get their qualities by that service to the devotees. I should say honestly, I didn't have as much time to prepare as I like. Because now, thinking of this, I would go into Bhakti Sandarbha, which is Jiva Goswami's essays which describe the science of devotion, and go to the part where he describes service to the devotees and how powerful it is. And, you know, practically more powerful than anything else. Actually, I saw yesterday Sachi Sutta came. It's nice to see him here. And he spent the weekend of kind of spiritual activities, you know, and he's in Philadelphia and went there, the nice kirtan on South Street, Haryashri came here. But I'm seeing he's enlivened, but I know one of the reasons is because, you know, he went out of his way to serve Mother Kalini when she got ill. Appreciates her, but he had to serve her. And they made care. It has an effect on the heart. It has an effect. We're here in this nice house. You know, it's so nice. The devotees come over. You know, you get to cook for them. You get to serve them. You know, and it works. It works for personally. It works for the family. You know, and it's really such an important part of a spiritual practice. What to speak of just reorienting the consciousness from self-centeredness, how healthy it is to put others in the center. So it was nice, and I asked different people who they thought of, you know, and it's just nice. And I just realized this is the Bhagavatam, this is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the Bhagavatam presented progressively. That's why the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the Bhagavatam parallel each other, because it presents in levels of spiritual perfection. But just to hear it, I can see if I remember. Well, Sachi Sutta said, well, he was remembering Haryashva. Because he was just there in Philadelphia. But then when I thought of Haryashva, you just remember him, his enthusiasm, his kindness for serving the devotees, his dedication, his sacrifice of life to God. And it's so healthy to think of that in a favorable way, because sometimes we can become envious of people who are better than us in devotion. So it's nice. He was there and he was appreciating that. And Gail's daughter, she said, she's only in her teens. So I asked if she remembered Yajna Purush. And the example of spiritual leadership, whatever it is. It's just so nice to remember. And Kadamba Mala, she remembered, she's thinking of Dina Bandhu and Rupa Raghunath, Vrijabhasi serving in Vrindavan, their joyful mood and their spontaneity towards the Vrijabhasis and the servants of Krishna. And so in that way, different people. Samantha thought of her mother. She was very compassionate and empathetic. So this is the one of the main aspects of Shastra. And we also, and what to speak of, we're talking about Dadu, his old gentleman and his dutifulness and his open-heartedness, his spontaneity. We were remembering that. And it's a principle. It's a spiritual and psychological principle that if you meditate on those who are selfless and pure, something of their qualities come to us. I always remember my godbrother, His Holiness Parthasarathy Maharaj, that his spiritual practice, before he picks up his beads, 2 hours of prayers to Vaishnavas, past and present. And Devaki Nandadas, a very famous Aryan Vaishnava, who was actually initially, I believe, Gopala Chapala, one of the persons in the Leela of Chaitanya, the history of Chaitanya, who offended him. And then I think from that offense, he may have gotten leprosy, or I forgot which one that was. He may have gotten leprosy or something, and it humbled him. And then he just began to write prayers about Vaishnavas. And in his ecstasy of glorifying Vaishnavas, he wrote one verse, "I pray to all devotees of God in the past, in the present, and all those that yet to be born." He didn't leave them out in any place. So my friend, Parthasarathy Goswami, prays to all the devotees of Krishna and Krishna Lila, all the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and all his God siblings who he knows, and even the ones who may have a different mood from him. And, it's just so interesting because this is exactly what Pantanjali recommends to become free from envy, to be the well-wisher of those who are superior to you. And it doesn't mean just the people that are in the next generation. That's kind of easy. They're in a different category. But the people that are your own age, your own category, because that's really where the envy manifests. It's a real test of the mind, and it's so practical, because I think what we realize is, everything, our whole day is affecting our mind, right? Our whole day is affecting our mind. So we do sadhana, you know, to really concentrate and have the maximum effect. We do spiritual practice to have the maximum effect on our consciousness. But we're dealing all during the day. Every minute, it's an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness, because thoughts can be Krishna or Akrishna. Thoughts can be Krishna, tormenting, or Akrishna, not tormenting. And tormenting means there's thoughts that can bring us, because, see, the mind is the friend of the enemy. So when's the mind the friend? When the thoughts of the mind bring us closer to insight and realization. And when's the mind the enemy? When it brings us away from that. When it brings us out into the world as an enjoyer and controller. For every part of our day, is we're confronted with that, actually, especially in dealings with people. Of course, if our spiritual practices are strong, that affects how we see the world. But still, we did. So it's very nice. And just one thing about Dadu. You know, I was talking about Dharma. And Dharma is the activities we do, to bring us closer to our spiritual position of servants of God. And that's, again, every moment we're faced with different choices. The right choice is called Dharma. It's what we should be doing. So I was glorifying this elderly Vaishnav gentleman. Who had Dharma, was so fixed in doing their duty. And I was describing that this elderly gentleman, when he came to the ashram in Vrindavan, it was a huge community of hundreds and hundreds of devotees, but all the mail would come to one place, whether people lived in the ashram or not. And he had the duty of delivering the letters to the people. And at that time, there was no computers, no email, no phone. It was a big thing to get a letter. And he would even save it for 2 years and track down the person, because it was the right thing to do. The conception of inconvenience is not in their mind. The conception of selfishness is not in their mind. Their minds are ruled by principles, what we should be doing. And therefore, especially to adhere to principles, you have to be honest. Because it means there's a question of when you know something is true, of doing it. So you have to be honest. You have that conception that I cannot go against principles. That's honesty. So that attachment for integrity and that attachment for principle is so powerful. It's more powerful than anything else. And how does it come? When you grow up, you see people, your father and mother and others who are truthful. How does it come? You read the stories in the Shastra. Of course, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is going beyond just honesty. It's going to the point of love. But the platform is honesty, adhering to principles and agreements and commitments. And you read these stories, and that's what happens. they're inspiring. And that's why the Mahabharata is so prominent in India. In a village, you can imagine, previously in an Indian village, every night there would be some reciter. And their voices were so powerful that you could hear the guitar all over the village. And people would congregate. And they would hear Mahabharata, they would hear the Ramayana, they would hear these stories, and they would feel, I want to be like them. I want to be someone who's truthful. I don't want to be someone who's dishonest. And they would develop that way. Now, in today's story, we have Hanuman. It's Narada's search for the greatest devotee. And now he's he's met Hanuman. And the great devotee, as I mentioned many times, he's so oriented as servant. He's so oriented as being the object of someone else's desire that he cannot identify with being glorified. Because glorification tends to put because it demonstrates one's adherence to principle. It demonstrates one's spiritual objective. Even just from, again, a psychological viewpoint of happiness, I'm studying this book on happiness. It's written by a Buddhist monk. Although Buddhism is atheistic, and I don't agree with their ultimate conclusions, I can appreciate the understanding of how the mind works. And I really like the point the person made, that happiness is not pleasure, it's well-being. It's not external. It's not, you know, the sensual stimulation and the environment. That's not an absolute correlation for pleasure. It's the state of the mind. And a lot of times, the externals can degrade the state of the mind so that the people who are enjoying are suffering more. One time, Prabhupada was walking on the beach. And I think someone passed him. Either he had it was a fisherman, or it was someone with a cup of coffee, or something. And when Papa passed, said, "Hey, would you like some?" Papa said, "No, you enjoy." And then when he walked by and said, "Suffer." Yehi some sparshava dukha yoena ayantavanta kontaya. The senses, which are sources, they degrade the consciousness. That's one of the first realizations I had in spiritual life. The correlation between illicit sensual activity and mental health. I understood that it was against mental health. That it brought down the consciousness. And you know, we always we have that phenomenon also that sometimes the simpler countries have higher happiness quotas. The very wealthiest people sometimes are the most depressed, because they're so directed to superficial things that they never work on the well-being, because they're so fixed that it's external, and it's so frustrating, because you had the facilities to fulfill all your desires, but it's not working. And this Buddhist speaker, because I first heard him speak, really brilliant. He was the Dalai Lama's translator. He was from France. So when the Dalai Lama went to France, translated. He said they put the Dalai Lama in I think it was in Luxembourg or Zurich. in this luxury skyscraper, and across the street they were building even a better one. And he made the point, when they finished that building, right, so beautiful, but if someone doesn't have a right state of mind, he'll see the beautiful window on the top floor as something to jump through. So we have to be fixed on this, especially, I'm getting a little hint of the economic difficulties and the pressures that people are being put under. What does that do? You know, when you have the growth and the superficially, the money's pouring out of people's pockets, then they don't tend to seek as much real happiness. But when the opportunities for material pleasure is reduced, a pious, intelligent person, because we're pleasure-seeking people, will go internally. How can I increase the state of my consciousness? Right? I mean, and we see that. You can go, you see that also in Vrindavan a lot of times, and India, people see a lot of poverty, or what they, in the villages. But, you can think of so many rickshaw drivers, right, that are infinitely more happy than people that come from the West in their life that they live. You can see the smile on their face, you can just see that. It's not absolute. Of course, they may have bad habits, but you can see it. So, difficulties on that platform, he sees, the Pandavas had difficulties. What does that? What does the difficulties do? For the devotee, it makes him depend on God. And God is a person, so God responds and is there. He's so fortunate in that way. He's so fortunate because in that struggle, God is there. And we can look at that. We can look at that, a devotee who may undergo some great struggle, but takes shelter, it gives him the impetus to grow and take shelter of God, and he's with God in heart. And someone who has greater happiness, and it's all directed externally outside. So who actually got Krishna's mercy? Of course, we have to be careful about this term, Krishna's mercy, in the sense that we shouldn't go over to people that are suffering and say it's Krishna's mercy. And now, let's just go to the verse today. O Pandavas, pure love has subdued you. Ignoring discrimination and etiquette, you engage my Lord as your messenger. And so one of the things he's glorifying is the intimacy of the relationship that the Pandavas had. Hanuman is the greatest devotee. He doesn't even want to be liberated. If liberation means he loses his sense of individual self, he doesn't want it. People are aspiring to be liberated. Liberated means to be free from all anxiety, all pain. So if that's your desire, it could lead to a type of spiritual self-annihilation. A liberation. All you want is to get out. Anyway, I should elaborate on that more, but we'll get back to that. But it's Hanuman. He said, if liberation means I can no longer be the servant of Ram, I don't want that. He's such a great devotee. Narayana Parastarve, Nakutas Chanyad Vibhuti. So on, the devotee who really loves God, he doesn't care. Hell, heaven. Doesn't care where he is. He wants that service. That's his standard of happiness. So The Pandavas, Hanuman is seeing, well, I serve Ram faithfully, but the your relationship with the Pandavas was so intimate that the force of the Pandavas, the relationship of Krishna and the Pandavas was so intimate that the force of the Pandavas' love invoked God, invoked Krishna to respond in such a way that Krishna became their servant. He was forced. That's the nature of love. The nature of love is that it arrests, it controls the person whom you... And it's kind of an irony. You surrender yourself to someone to serve them. But the force of that type of love forces that person to serve you or desire to do so. And that's what love is. Love means you are focused on another's desires. And you want to subordinate yourself to that desire. You want to serve that desire. So when you do that, then the nature of love is that it forces that person to want to serve you. You don't want that service. So the Pandavas were just so forceful in their service that Krishna became their messenger. And in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, we're introduced to Krishna as the servant of the Pandavas. The first time we see Krishna, he's driving that chariot. He's forced. He's impelled. And that's the nature of love. It's coming from the heart. And in this verse, it's very interesting. It says, Vajita, that pure love, which is prema, then when someone, prema paradhina, when is under the control of prema, then one is just acting from the heart. Now, again, I spoke yesterday that there's the impulsive analysis of phenomena, of data that comes into the mind, and there's a reflective analysis. And the process of yang, the process of spiritual life, you try to act on the platform of buddhi, reflective analysis, where your response to the world can be according to what's good, what's best, and not just how you feel. And I describe how really, if you analyze what the science of Dharma is, when the Shastras present the science of Dharma, what is it? It's that science of responding to the world in every circumstance to invoke good thoughts in the consciousness that bring you closer to insight. Anytime you're faced in any circumstance, you have a choice. The choice that will lead to an elevation of consciousness is called Dharma. It's called Dharma, the elevation of consciousness. Even if you're oppressed, even if someone mistreats you, if someone actually has abhyasa, practice, vairagya, dispassion, and even if someone mistreats him, it will not degrade his consciousness. His thoughts he'll respond to the circumstance and he'll think about the circumstance in a way that elevates the consciousness. He'll respond to it. And therefore, we have the great example of Socrates when the Roman Senate, for political reasons, out of fear of losing control, populace to Socrates. Socrates, who was inspiring people to listen to him out of his great wisdom. When they unfairly condemned him, he looked at them and he said, if you think you can harm me, you can't harm me. You only harm yourself because you're not acting by Dharma. Because you're not acting Dharma, you'll degrade the consciousness. And because I'm going to respond with dignity and I'm going to respond with Dharma, and even you're going to kill me, you won't harm me. Because I'll only think things and I'll only do things and only respond to things in a dignified, appropriate way. So, generally, intelligent person, he does things by judgment and understanding. And therefore, according to etiquette, according to science. But when someone has developed the impressions in the heart of pure love, that his mind has the attachments for the pleasure of service and love in a particular relationship, in this case, specifically in relationship to God, then one will not go to the platform of intelligence. He'll just go by the heart. But it's dangerous to just go by the heart until one has actually legitimately developed that love. Because if the love is not imbued in the heart and you go just by the heart, you'll be acting according to selfishness. Your consciousness will be degraded. But when you actually have love, and that's your attachment, that you serve God and you practice sadhana, and therefore the attachment and pleasure in your heart is to serving God, then you'll act on that platform. And if it won't correspond, it won't be an absolute correlation with the rules and the regulations. It doesn't mean that it goes against the regulations. It means it's not an absolute correlation. It means there's not an absolute correlation between. And therefore, sometimes etiquette will be violated. But that's even more plain. I'll give you an example. Kamal Krishnamaj, I remember this story. Maybe Carl and Stella are there. And Kamal Krishnamaj would be sitting, you know, he's the guru, and their younger daughter would just come up and just sit on there. She wasn't digesting the circumstance by booty. Oh, my uncle is the great Acharya, and he's in the assembly of all his followers. I cannot act in that way. But it's just forceful. No, this is not by discrimination and not by etiquette, just by pure love. And therefore, it's appreciated. Oh, yes. And Kamal Krishna appreciated it. So it's like that. It's like that. So he's... And here... Hanuman is describing this, and that spontaneous love is so attractive. That's called kevala bhakti. It's only bhakti. And there's nothing external. There's nothing external to bhakti, even the sense of etiquette. Just like I sat yesterday with my friend Rupa, Govardhan Lal's son. Spontaneous devotion. We had a nice chat. He had no idea who I was. We just we just have nice talk. This is so attractive because it's love and just love. You definitely should hide there in the corner because they're looking. Where I'm giving class is the beautiful temple room, and then there's these glass doors, and the family of Kishori Rada woke up, so they come down the stairs, and they parade by these doors, and they're glass doors. So Kishori Radha is hiding in the corner where they can't see, but they're looking in the temple here, and they somehow know that they can't come in now. Okay. So the ecstasy, there's an attraction for it. There's an attraction. And that's why Raganuga Bhakti is in relationship to Krishna. Because it's more attractive. Because, well, it's to Krishna because Krishna is all attractive. And he's all attractive because Krishna does not appear as God. He appears as a cowherd boy, which means all the relationships and all the loving dealings can manifest. Not just, I am superior, but he can manifest, I am equal. He can manifest, I am subordinate. That's so attractive. So Hanuman is in just this ecstasy, glorifying because of his spontaneity. He is astounded at their behavior with Krishna, violating the properties that forbid servants from giving orders to their masters. The Pandavas failed even to consider that menial services like carrying messages are not tasks in which to engage Krishna. Out of love, it's all from devotion. Out of love, they just exchange. And therefore it violates some of the principles of understanding. But that's more potent because it's just love. And therefore, the next verse Hanuman says, and then I'm going to open up to discussion and questions, you Pandavas must know some transcendental herb or mantra that can enchant the most powerful chair. How is it possible that God is forgetting himself? What have you done? Give him a... He's just become your servant. He's your gatekeeper. He's walking behind in procession. Doesn't he know? He is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he's just acting as... What have you done? And then later it will explain, well, what is that? You are conquered by your great affection for your devotees. That's how you attract their hearts. Okay, are there any questions? Is anybody still there? I hope I didn't lose everyone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Yes, we're here.
Where are you, Gail, now?
I'm in the car on my way to Shankaravishu Prabhu invited me to hear Radhanath Maharaj at the sanctuary. I had just gone to Tulako to drop off my daughter, who's having a picnic with Bhakti Churu Maharaj and the rest of the youth at Tulako. And then that's when I got the invitation to go to the sanctuary to hear Radhanath Maharaj. So I didn't even know that I was going to be doing this.
You didn't know he was going to be speaking there?
No, I did, but I didn't know that I was going to be going there myself today. I just went out my house to go to Tulako to drop my daughter off.
Well, you finally attained the level of spontaneous devotional service. She was going someplace to drop her daughter off. Now she's wandering to New York City to go to the class. I'm not sure if I'll have time, but on my way upstate New York, when I finish everything, I may just stop in just to get the association of the devotees there. We'll see. What's your question, Gail?
No, I chimed in just to let you know that we are still here. You asked if anybody is still here.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for doing that service.
No, I didn't
see, have... I see, Gail, more and more you're asking less and less questions.
Sure. Oh, one thing, though, Ron, I...
I should stop one of my hands. Anybody else like to say hello today?
Even a question, Maharaj. I said it wasn't even a question, it was a realization.
Well, thank you for sharing your realization.
Well, I didn't share it yet.
Oh, please share it then. Okay.
No, yesterday,
yeah.
During the class, you were discussing the basic four categories that people fit into, you know, superior,
yeah.
All like that, you know. And I was racking my brains because after class I had forgotten one of the four categories, and it turned out to be a good thing because when I finally remembered, I realized that I could categorize them in this way. You can, you know, see if you agree with it, but
okay.
That they're like kind of two categories, one superior, one inferior, and in the superior category, you could be superior in a secular way, you know, or
yeah.
In a religious way.
Okay.
And it's also true for the inferior category. You could be inferior in a secular way as well as in a religious way, you know, you're immoral, you know.
Okay.
Secular way is if you have less opulences, you know. Or
very good. If people, just so that they get on track here, I mentioned that in the Yoga Sutras, and it's not, you know, what these philosophies do, they just, you know, glean basic points that around, you know, these are, these kind of conceptions are not something that's not there in Vaishnavism, but these categorize very nicely how you deal with the people in the world. So he said people that are more materially prosperous than you or happy, even healthy, whatever it is, those are more pious. Those are more less happy and those who are less pious. And the thing is, the reaction to the pious and the happy is the same reaction is you should be their well-wisher to avoid envy. And then the response to those who are less happy is compassion to avoid exploitation and aggressiveness. And the impious is there's tolerance. So Gail said the categorization is basically those that are better than you and those that are less than you. And the better are the happy and the pious, and the less are those who are less pious and less happy. So I think, Gail, that's a valid categorization of them. The only thing is the reactions are not, the reactions to pious and happy are the same, well-wisher.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I know. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Gail. That's a nice way of categorizing it.
Yeah, it's easier for me to remember it that way, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna.
Jai Dvaitamar. Hi, Bo. Hi, Krishna.
Hi, Bo. Good.
You're still down there in Gainesville, huh?
I am.
Okay. Okay. We will see you at the end of the month at the festival at the Rub.
Definitely.
Oh,
definitely.
Great. Great. I just heard that Ridayananda Maharaj is coming up.
Wow, how about that?
He'll be in the area. I don't know if he knows he's coming, but somehow he was scheduled to speak on the same day, and Shamak Rishi asked if he could come up there. So he should come up there. I mean, I don't know if he knows about it. And anyway, we'll be looking forward to kind of seeing you up here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Your home state,
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, that was Amiya and that was Indrani, right?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you for class, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Thank you again for this class this morning.
Okay. Thank you, Amiya. Great. You arrived home safely, that's right.
I did, absolutely, yes. I
okay. Thank you. Mother Indrani, thank
yes,
you
Maharaj.
For coming on.
Thank you for giving such wonderful class.
If you would think, Mother Indrani, besides any of your gurus, if you would meditate on a person you know who you consider is saintly, can you name one of the people you would think of?
Yes, one of the mothers here. In fact, I plan to call her on the phone. Nanda Dasi here in Alachua.
Nanda. Very nice. And what's the quality in her that you see?
Just so much love and caring, and she listens when I'm talking.
Very nice. I'll tell you a nice story about Nanda.
Uh-huh.
I took my my cousin, Maseva Bharati. She's been 31 years in a spiritual practice, and she's a sannyasini. And she lives in the Himalayas, and she came to Vrindavan. And I took her to the Govardhan retreat one day. So people didn't know who she was. She wears all like a saffron. And she sits down to listen to the class, right?
Yeah.
And immediately Nanda comes over and gives her a seat and befriends her. And then my cousin liked it so much that Nanda invited my cousin to stay in her room. And so my cousin actually wound up staying in the retreat. So it's nice. So that's nice to think of people. And I appreciate that too, because I think in a spiritual movement, I think your Guru Maharaj really honed in on this, that the main quality we have to have is we have to be thinking of others.
Yes.
So a lot of times we come to a function, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we come to it for our own social reasons. And then a new person comes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one talks to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciated that my cousin came. She didn't know anyone there. And immediately someone was thinking, you know, about her and what her needs are, and it touched her heart. Well, thank you, Mother Indrani.
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you. Travel safely.
Okay, thank you. And give my regards to Nanda. Anyone else like to say hello today? I understand some people having problems unmuting the phone, but I have it on. You can unmute your phones. It's *6, right? You press *6. But
thank you. Some people ask Maharaj.
Who's that?
Henry.
Oh, Henry. Oh, great. And nice to hear from you, Henry. And remembering you and your sister very fondly. Thank you. Good. Anyone else like to say hello? Okay, so we can end today. Thank you. Vanshakopa Tarubhyascha Kutasindhu Vedusha Patitanam Pavanibhya.